Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
I think part of the problem in America and with the American crowds is, like, there's no self-policing at all.
No.
Like, that's how crowds work.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
The Final One Standing by William Hill on Off the Ball. Download the app and play today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
You are welcome along to Final One Standing, and we're looking ahead to the weekend's Premier League action. Final One Standing on Off the Ball is brought to you by William Hill. Download the app and play today. Over 18s only. See gamblingcare.ie for more. In the studio with me today, we have David Wilson. Hello, David.
Hey, Owen.
And Michael McCarthy. How are you, Mick?
I'm excited.
I've been obviously famously turfed out of the league for not submitting my pick there after week two, I think it was. So I've been paying only a peripheral interest to what's actually been happening within the own confines of our office. Turns out we've got somebody who's about to win a load of money in the next couple of weeks, Mick.
We're down to, in the overall William Hill, the main game for 500,000. We're down to the last 8,800 from 292,000.
Wow.
So there's not that many left.
You're one of them.
I am one of them. In the Off the Ball League, we're down to the last 10, and I'm one of them.
And how many people were in that?
I'm not allowed to keep that money, though, if they donate it to charity.
Okay.
Close to 200, I think. I'm not exactly sure. So.
And you're the last one in the office.
I am the last one in the office, yeah. Now, I've got a bit of a dilemma this week, because in the main William Hill game, I have Arsenal left in that game, unbelievably, at this stage of the season. They're home to West Ham. Now, of course, something crazy will happen and it'll lead me to blame you personally on Monday if Arsenal don't get the job done. But look, it's a no-brainer pick this late in the game. I used Arsenal already in the off-the-ball game. I split it 1 week where I took a bit of a risk on Bournemouth in the overall one.
Okay.
So I don't have Arsenal to pick there. I do actually have Bournemouth, though, at home to Fulham.
All right. So
which I'm kind of thinking of. Manchester United, I'm not ready to pick yet.
In form, Bournemouth can go second.
Villa at home to Burnley, though. Villa have won 3 in a row. I've been staying away from them, both for and against, so far this season. So there's a few choices there. I don't know. I actually feel like I've got a pretty favourable week, but I haven't made my pick yet.
Okay, you're feeling the pressure?
I'm feeling excited, genuinely. I you play these games usually in offices and things like that, and I never get past the first 2 or 3 weeks. I'm out of the NFL 1-2 weeks already, and my first ever run is the time I'm doing it on a mixture of the radio and actually for on the William Hill game.
Did you have a tactic, or did you have like a? Did you look ahead like 10 games in front? Or
no. My only tactic is to not overthink it and not try and keep somebody for later because you're being too smart. Just try and pick the winners each week and worry about next week's fixtures next week.
Yeah. So just to run you through the
pure luck, of course.
Fixtures over the course of the weekend. It's Leeds United versus Tottenham Hotspur tomorrow at 12:30. Manchester United versus Sunderland. Arsenal versus West Ham is just 2-3 o'clock fixtures tomorrow. It's Chelsea versus Liverpool in the 5:30 slot tomorrow, which we'll preview most of all today. Everton versus Palace, Newcastle versus Forest, Wolves versus Brighton, Villa versus Burnley, all at 2 o'clock on Sunday. This is really where the expansion of the Sky Sports. You've gone for Villa.
Just there, yeah. Now I think I watched them last night. Best performance of the season. 3 wins in a row. Getting better each game, home to Burnley. Villa Park was a fortress before the early season slump. I think that's a nice pick to have today at this with 10 left in the game.
Yeah, for sure. There's a chunky set of teams there right in front of the relegation zone. You've got Newcastle, you've got Villa, you've got Forest, you've got Manchester United. Villa are the one team of that quartet that you'd back to pull away over the next couple of weeks.
Me personally?
No, in general. Like
yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think so. Because I don't think we know what to expect from Forest. United, we've just been in this slump for so long now. It feels like they're the 15th, 16th best team in the Premier League. Like, that might be just the way, it might be the reality of the situation. It also might not be, but we've seen no evidence of it so far. Whereas I think what you've seen from Villa is they absolutely collapsed against Palace. And since then have got very, very gradually better. A poor performance against Everton, a poor performance against Sunderland, but on the front foot, and they've won the last 3 since, and last night being, despite the fact massively flawed, the best performance and an away win against a finer team that were genuinely on fire under Robin van Persie in the match itself as opposed to in the season.
Right, let's get our match previews up and running. Let's bring Lee Phelps from William Hill in. Lee, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. How are you guys?
Yeah, all good, all good. Mick is very giddy here. He's down to the last 8,800 in the Global League. Talk to us about what's happened here. What were the big hurdles that people tripped over? What are most users looking at this weekend? What's the picture?
Yeah, well, I mean, looking at last weekend in the original and the biggest final one standing, the €500,000 jackpot. I mean, over 55% went with Man City. So, you know, eventually it looked a little bit shaky at times against Burnley, but eventually, obviously, they got through that. But a lot of the others really like fell over. You know, you had looking onto Monday night, you had like 1,300 going for Everton, obviously ended up drawing. A lot went for Tottenham as well. Obviously, that was hard to predict that one. So I think most picked Man City, and but a lot of others went out. And it's a similar story this weekend, really. I mean, just listening to you guys there talking about Aston Villa, I mean, they are the pick this weekend. You know, the majority, and obviously we're getting to that stage where, you know, players just haven't got the big teams left, so you're starting to having to be a bit creative. But then you look down the list and you think, look at the price of Villa. And like you say, the form is just coming right at the right time. 53% of players in that €500,000 jackpot have gone for Aston Villa. Of the others, over 16% have gone for Arsenal, so still got Arsenal in their back pocket. 8.5% going for Newcastle at home to Forest. Remember, picks have got to be done by 8 p.m. tonight. So I'm hoping this doesn't catch people out, because obviously we've been doing Saturday deadlines. 8 p.m. tonight is the deadline for that that Bournemouth Fulham kickoff. So all picks on whatever league you're in, whether it's in the off the ball private league or the main jackpot leagues or any of the other €50,000 leagues, €200,000 leagues, whichever one you're in, then they've got to be in by 8 p.m. today. So make sure you get those in.
Mick is in that 16% of people who have Arsenal available. And I suppose if you look at their fixture list to date, it was the toughest run to this point. So it's not an anomaly that you have Arsenal left. So just to clarify, you are going for Aston Villa at this point.
I went for Aston Villa in our league, which only has 10 people left in it, because I've used Arsenal in that, but I didn't use Arsenal in the overall thing. So
are you tempted to go with Villa in the overall?
I am tempted to change now based on what Lee is saying, because I didn't realise so few people had Arsenal left. And I think if I could keep them for another week, I think that could put me in good shape.
So this is where I was talking to someone last night.
Even
about
that was exactly against my methodology so far. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Stick to what you've been doing. Like someone was saying to me last night that they went out last week because they just went against what they've been doing. And like, I was like, what was your strategy up until that point? And they were like, I just picked the shortest team every week. I was like, yeah. So just keep doing that then. Why did you change? And he picked Fulham to beat Villa last week when his model would have had him picking City. I was like, just pick the, I mean, if it makes sense, doesn't it, pick the team that's most likely to win each week. I know it doesn't always happen like that with odds, but Villa are a short price this weekend to do that. So make your pick. Don't go, you've got this far, you're seven rounds in, don't change your strategy now.
I suspect a lot of teams and a lot of players rather are not going to have Liverpool available to them this weekend. Chelsea versus Liverpool away from final one standing, probably the pick of the fixtures this weekend. Lee, what else is catching your eye outside of the game?
Yeah, Man United versus Sunderland. Okay. I mean, I just couldn't believe the prices of Manchester United, given what we know about, you know, where Man United are at the moment. I just couldn't believe they were that short. Now, I'm not saying Sunderland are amazing, but they are full of confidence, aren't they? You know, you can't deny that. This is a team who've, you know, had a fantastic start to the season. It's the best start since, you know, West Ham way back in the 2010s. Man United 1-2 at home to Sunderland. Now, I understand it, but There's nothing in me that would make me want to back Man United at 1-2 at the moment. Whereas Sunderland, just under 5-1, 24-5 to win at Old Trafford. The draw 16-5. Look, whichever way you do it, if you like your handicap bets, you go Sunderland plus a goal. So they start a goal to the good. That might be one way in. If you don't want to take the nearly 5-1, fair enough. I understand why, you know, people might think, well, but it wouldn't be. I mean, if Sunderland win that game, it wouldn't be a huge surprise to any of us, would it? It wouldn't be like we were thinking, what? How did that happen? So, maybe look at, Yeah, maybe look at Sunderland on the handicap there. I do like that one. But that Chelsea-Liverpool game is fascinating. It's quite hard to predict because you don't quite know what you're going to get from either team, do you? I mean, Liverpool, obviously the favourites in the game, 5-4. Second favourites for the title, by the way, now. Arsenal have gone favourites for the Premier League title after last weekend. The draw, Chelsea-Liverpool is 27-10. And Chelsea are priced up at 9-5. I think it is a tough one to call. Like I said, I'm not quite sure which of either of the teams going to turn up. Liverpool's goals maybe dried up a little bit. If you want a little bit of an outside one, Van Dijk to score is 10-1, 25-1 to score first. He scored in the League Cup final against Chelsea, of course, and in the 3-1 defeat. Chelsea won 3-1 at the Bridge end of last season, so he's scored 2-2 against Chelsea, and you know, always likely to get one from a set piece, isn't he? So yeah, that might be a way into that one.
One other thing that I wanted to know as well is, how's the sack race looking in terms of the market at the moment? I mean, Ange Postecoglou has inserted himself into the conversation.
Yeah, it's like, it's weird what's happened with Ange, isn't it? Like, how he's like suddenly like coming to this club, and he just doesn't seem to have any, it's not luck, is it, but like any kind of like any good grace anymore. Like it's struggling. But yeah, I mean, after last weekend, it was Ruben Amorim who was favourite, and Ange, like you say, is right in there in the betting as well after Potter went. I mean, it's almost like, you know, Potter was obviously a huge favourite to go first and then went, and then Amorim had the 3-1 defeat, so it's like every week the traders are having to readjust these markets. But yeah, it's Amorim and Ange are right at the top of that market at the shortest prices.
Okay, very good. We'll keep an eye on that one. Listen, Lee Phelps from William Hill, thanks a million for joining us.
Yeah, and good luck, everyone. Get your picks in by 8 p.m, remember.
That's it, 8 p.m. That is the Bournemouth versus Fulham game this evening in the Premier League. Right, let's talk Chelsea versus Liverpool in a bit of depth. Chelsea won this fixture 3-1 back in May when Liverpool were in complete garbage time at this point. And I think that idea that we don't really know where either team is truly at, I think, rings true. Like, Liverpool, top of the table, Liverpool going to Chelsea, who've been in a state of chaos for a period of time, should mean that we're kind of talking about a Liverpool win here, or at least heavy favouritism. But I just feel that it's hard to actually have that confidence right now in Liverpool.
Yeah, I suppose they've lost the last two games. I know one game being in Europe during the week, but I still feel that, like, I wouldn't be panicking if I was Liverpool. I definitely wouldn't be panicking if I was a Liverpool fan. Like, are they going to lose? They haven't. I don't think they've lost three games in a row under Arne Slot. This is only the second time that they've lost two games in a row in his tenure as well. Like, in that game against Palace last week, things could have gone, they're awful for the first 45 minutes. But then again, they only conceded one goal, and then the second half they were pushing that when they got the equaliser, they even had chances to win the game before Nketiah won the game for Palace. The game during the week, I thought they played quite well against Galatasaray, and they got done with maybe an unfortunate penalty decision. But they played good football, and obviously they had, like, this. The team is going through, obviously, a period of transition. We're kind of coming away from the, I don't want to kind of retire him too early, but we're kind of coming out of the Mo Salah era at Liverpool, and yeah, we're moving into like the Wirtz, Ekitike, Isak era, I think.
Well, that is, I think, the big talking point for Liverpool at the moment, as opposed to what the likes of Florian Wirtz has failed to do so far, because he's so early into his career. It is how the burden of Mo Salah gets shared amongst the rest of the attackers. Like, it's one of these things that his output is going to decline at some point. He might turn around and score a hat-trick at the weekend. There's always that chance right now with Salah, but his output is going to decline. He was responsible for, in terms of goal involvements, around 60% of Liverpool's goals last season. No other team relied on one attacker as much as Liverpool relied on Mo Salah in the Premier League last season, which is fantastic when Mo Salah has the season that he has. But what Liverpool now want to do is they want to control that number going south, as opposed to Salah himself nosediving as that number goes south and nobody's there to pick up the pieces. And look, that is why people have looked to Wirtz, is because maybe the team hasn't looked overly well oiled at this point. And Isak is going to be the one that I would look to over the next month to try to be the one who's going to start meeting that output, I would say, or trying to match Salah's output.
Yeah. Well, the three most expensive signings in the summer window, and they're all playing in the same area of the pitch, like, it's going to take some time. Like, you know, and obviously we've talked about Wirtz before, talking about whether we're, like, it's a settling in period for him or not, or whether he's going to come into form or flop or so on. The issue is, I think, more that the team are playing in a different shape. And again, it's just going to take some time. But they've done some brilliant stuff in attack so far this season. You know, they've faltered this week, but it's mainly been a leaky defence that's been the problem, you know. So I know they have probably had issues, be it the Burnley game or the Palace game last week, is when they are chasing a game of breaking down defences. But they have done it eventually as well in those games. So I just don't know what to think about Liverpool at the moment. I kind of feel like they'll be grand. I feel like the talent is there. And the form isn't so bad that you can't expect that you don't think that it will come good in a month or two's time. But they just have to do what they were doing in the first five games of the season, which was while they're finding their way, pick up points, you know. Yeah. So Chelsea are probably just in a bigger, you know, it's almost the perfect team to play in a way because it's a big enough game that'll get you up for it. But
and there's a flimsiness.
It's a team in even more crisis. Like, you know, if you like, Tosin and Shabala are both out for this game.
They need to stop getting men sent off for a start.
That'd be handy, yeah. For start, they have to stop playing Brighton all the time as well because no good. All those lads against their ex club doing them a favour. But I wouldn't have that as a great centre half partnership. Now, to be honest, I can't understand how Chelsea have got themselves in that place. But it is ultimately what Maresca has been picking. So the fact that neither of them are available,
Colin's been a big miss. Oh,
fair enough, but he's out too. So it's not as if he comes back in. Wesley Fofana is out. So it's like there's you know, four of their first choice centre backs are all gone, and then you have obviously the Cole Palmer issue up front. I think Liam Delap has been actually a loss to them, even though he's come in. I found his link up play when Palmer was out the first time, him and Pedro seemed to have a really, really good connection. I don't think Delap is going to score a load of goals for them, but I think he could be a really important player when he kind of gets going. And I don't know, everyone else is just a bit of a high and low kind of player. You're not expecting every week output out of Neto. You're not expecting Estevao's too young. He'll give you moments, but he's not going to impact games.
Not Garnacho.
Certainly not Garnacho. So I don't know. I just find I'm... It's funny because I don't have any great love for Chelsea or anything like that, but considering what I thought of them in pre-season and how I thought that they had, for all of their madness and the fact that they've almost got a separate business in transfer dealings, that's almost a completely different thing to what they do on the football pitch. I thought they'd actually settled their team slightly and added to it rather than completely ripped it up and started again. But a few weeks into the season, it feels like it's just another new start.
Yeah, it definitely does. I was looking at the story just to kind of remind myself of Liverpool gazumping Chelsea and then Chelsea gazumping Liverpool to sign Moises Caicedo 2 seasons ago. And one of the first things that comes up is actually on the Liverpool website, on their Media Watch section. And it still has the London Independent story of them signing Caicedo up on their website, which I think is like a deliberate sort of move to be like, we got you eventually. You had to fork out all that money for a midfielder who actually went to you guys while we went and won the league with what we would deem to be a more superior midfield. But kind of allied to that then this week, I see a lot of Chelsea fans hoping for Romeo Lavia to start this weekend for Chelsea. Probably a little bit too soon in terms of his fitness, but another man who chose Chelsea over Liverpool. And you think to yourself, like, pound for pound, if Enzo Maresca gets the best out of all these players and everybody is fit, we should be able to have a real discussion about a combined Chelsea-Liverpool midfield. Like, Caicedo at his top level, Lavia at his top level, maybe not Enzo Fernandez, I'm not his biggest fan, but at least those two should be making that debate more interesting, whereas now I think you pick McAllister, Gravenberch and Szoboszlai as your combined trio in midfield. Yeah. And I just feel the level that some of those Chelsea midfielders can get to, I think should make that more of a conversation, which it just hasn't been.
Yeah, but I think Moises Caicedo was one of the best midfielders, maybe the best midfielder in the league last year, other than kind of outside the Liverpool.
One of the best right backs as well, though.
Yeah, true. But he's still like insanely young. I think he's like 23 or 24. Like still, like he's obviously been around for a long time playing at Brighton. Romeo Lavia, yeah, like he came in for Chelsea last season and was good for a game or two, and then he went missing for the rest of the season because he's constantly injured. He can't stay fit. And the durability and the reliability of players like Gravenberch, Szoboszlai, Alexis McAllister as well, to a certain extent, he's still coming back from kind of an injury in pre-season as well. Like that is, you know, that's an insane level of reliability that you can have in your team, that those three midfielders, and obviously Virts is added into that now as well, can play literally week in, week out, whereas Chelsea cannot seem to keep players fit, either players that are playing at the back or playing in the middle of midfield. I think, I don't know, Enzo Fernandez, I think that's quite a a harsh thing. I think he's quite a good midfielder. Yeah. I don't think
he's won the World Cup.
I don't. Well, yeah, but there's been bad players who won the World Cup though. But
say something I won't say. But anyway,
well, I think there's probably he doesn't know his best position. I don't think Maresca knows the best position for him, kind of to get the best out of him either. And I think he actually plays better without Cole Palmer in the team.
Okay,
that's what I was going to say. Do Chelsea? They're obviously going to play with Cole Palmer, so we can forget all the hypotheticals and so on, and they'll be more dangerous and they'll score. But do the midfield players they have suit three more central players, or more, I suppose, flat, maybe Lavia, Casado and Fernandez in a slightly freer role? Would that suit all three of them better rather than the overall team even?
I think it would. I think Fernandez is best... his best attributes are kind of running towards the box, getting in the box, playing sometimes in between the lines as well. I just don't feel he and Palmer kind of click that well. I know Chelsea fans might say, oh no, they do, but I don't think they do. And I think as well that I don't know if Maresca is going to last that much longer as well as Chelsea manager. Three wins in the last six Premier League games. They've obviously spent loads and loads of money, but there comes a time where, you know, they're singing, was it last, towards the end of last season, you know, the Chelsea fans were singing, we've got our Chelsea back, but this Chelsea, this version of Chelsea, this kind of reliance on having massive amounts of the ball isn't really the Chelsea style, not from the one that we had with kind of Mourinho. So I don't see Chelsea. I can see Chelsea improving a little bit, but I don't see it in the long term. Maresca kind of being successful at the club.
You know what I was saying a few minutes ago about their transfer thing and how they basically make money as a club being almost separate to what's happening on the field. It does also affect it though, because you become addicted to that kind of thing. So say you had someone like Madueke, there's a financial thing to that, of course, right? But instead of trying to groom somebody like that into becoming a great player, you get rid of him and you go and spend big on Gittens. Is he better? Do you know what I mean? Is that an improvement? I know they play on separate sides of the pitch, but in a more general sense, right? Is that an improvement, or is that just somebody who's we have to get in this thing that we don't have? You know, we have to go and get it, and we just get rid of the person that we have that clearly has loads of potential and has loads of there's loads of opportunity for improvement there. And he knows the club and he's already there and there's no settling in period and so on. But I said, we'll ship him off, we'll get someone new in, and then in 2 years it'd be like, oh, we've had enough of Gittens, let's get somebody else in again, you know?
Yeah. I think Jamie Gittens was signed because he was perhaps perceived to be a little bit quicker than Madueke. Gittens,
I'm not even saying he's bad, you know, my point though.
Yeah, but I think with Chelsea, they even signing Garnacho as well. Garnacho's they're obviously signing these players in their early mid-20s, and obviously these players have sell-on value when they get to 25, 26, 27. I think Chelsea have just kind of rigged the game, and they realise if we can just keep the cash flowing, if we can just keep the money coming in, that the PSR constraints don't really kind of apply. And I think that's a loophole that Chelsea have done really well to find, but it's also... for the benefit of the game of
it's a bit depressing.
The stockpiling players, Raheem Sterling.
They're going to win him a league,
though. So, I was just about to say, when this first started happening, I kept saying, the house always wins. Chelsea are obviously going to win a Premier League title. They would say they've got on to do better than that. They are champions of the world. You'll never sing that.
Elephant in the room.
But there's also a team chemistry aspect to this, and I don't think it's actually been helped by this summer's transfer market. And it kind of comes back to my point, maybe Caicedo does start for Liverpool every day of the week now, ahead of anybody else. But even in terms of form and cohesion with other players in that midfield, it just feels that even a player as seemingly great as him is not absolutely at his top level, or is not absolutely near the peak of his powers. And I'm not sure how many of Chelsea's players you can say that about, that they have actually got the best out of themselves and the best out of their talents at the club. I just think chemistry has been lacking. The Maresca shout... potentially not going to see out the season, I think, is a good one. I wouldn't be awfully surprised given how high the expectations were at the start of the season.
Managers wear jeans.
No problem with it.
Did he wear jeans during the week?
I don't know about during the week. He wore definitely the last time I saw Chelsea, he was wearing a pair of jeans, yeah.
I don't indulge in the sartorial conversation around managers meaning something deeper. I'll comment on it being like, oh, you're a good dresser, you're a bad dresser. Maybe an impractical dresser at times when Pep in the rain wears his knitwear. But whether or not that says something about your qualities as a manager, I'm not willing to engage in that.
I do wonder if like you're part of a team, whether you should have some, like, be it a, if you're a Soup person or a tracksuit person, or even a Pep wearing a Man City hoodie person. I do wonder if you should have, you know, you should be wearing, you're at a sporting event as a manager. I just don't know if you wear your kind of like what you'd wear out to the pub on a Sunday afternoon for a pint is the best dress. But anyway,
I mean, yeah, there's only maybe his wardrobe is limited to only certain garments, and who knows what happened to his
should give him a few bob.
Who knows what happened to his actual Chelsea trousers earlier that morning? Newcastle versus Forest. We should chat about this because
Chelsea trousers.
This has become a really interesting fixture this weekend. Today is Ange Postecoglou's 25th day in the job as Nottingham Forest manager. He is the first Forest manager for 100 years to fail to win any of his first six matches. And the thing I would say to Nottingham Forest fans is not only do you need to be patient, but if you can just hang on until May 2027... you will be celebrating a trophy, because what does Ange always do in his second season? Now, it might be the Championship trophy, or it might be the LDB Lions or something like that, but it's certainly not going to be the Premier League trophy, I'd suggest. This has been an absolute disaster from minute one. And like, I'd rarely take my cues for this slot, or for any slot, from Fantasy Premier League discourse. However, when Ange Postecoglou came in, the FPL discourse was that Chris Wood's spot could be in danger. Is your best player from last season might lose a spot due to the appointment of a manager, you should not be appointing that manager.
I totally agree. And you're saying about that stat there about Forest managers, there's been some really, really bad Forest managers over the last maybe 30 years in particular. But Chris Wood being dropped, I think they signed this new shiny thing in Igor Jesus. I don't know if many people, you know, maybe watching would have watched the Club World Cup. I watched a little bit of it. He played for Botafogo and he was quite good. And he actually scored a couple of goals in the Cup for Forest. But I think this is kind of like that perfect example of, oh, we have this new shiny Brazilian striker and we have this, you know, this seasoned goal getter that we're going to...
Unfashionable.
Yeah, unfashionable. It's a bit like when you're playing, you know, Football Manager and you have like a 30-year-old, you're like, oh, he's getting too old, I want to bring in this 19-year-old wonder kid. That's kind of that FPL discourse.
Now, we don't know if he has been dropped. He didn't start last night in the Europa League. It's just the discourse.
Wood scored as well, didn't he?
Scored a penalty, yeah.
So it's just the suggestion that it might happen. But even the suggestion is enough for me to second guess myself. If I were Evangelos Marinakis, should I appoint this guy? So I'm saying it's not all hindsight, the fact that Ange is going to be a potential failure at this club.
I think the biggest worry about Ange is just, you know, like, he won the Europa League, grand. I understand that is something to be celebrated and to acknowledge and not to completely push aside. Now, let me push it aside and say that the job he did at Tottenham was horrendous. Like, he brought them from, you know, being on the verge of at least a like, you know, the whole thing about like the giving out about the idea of the Sky Big Six and so on, and the fact that like Spurs are always seen as the ones that are holding on to the coattails of that. Spurs are the only ones that always finish in the top six in that group until last season. You know what I mean? That's what got them into that.
I think horrendous is strong, personally.
Okay,
but they're playing Champions League football now because of him. Or maybe in spite of him.
I don't know. I'm looking at the Europa League with a lot of eyes, you know, keen eyes at the moment, and it's a poor competition because you've got so many teams in the Champions League. There's no drop down anymore. Yeah. Within the Europa League, if you're an English team, is a great thing to do, and there's an achievement to it. Of course there is. But they played the worst Manchester United team of all time in the final, and kind of nobody on the way there.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah, they beat Bodo Glimt in a semi-final who they drew it during the week. Yeah. And, like, obviously, you know, they're this kind of new fashionable team from Arctic Circle. But like,
what's the two wage bills?
Yeah,
is
exactly
what I mean. I'm not actually being disrespectful to any of the other teams, but I mean, you've got a massive, massive, massive advantage if you're the manager of Spurs in a Europa League.
Yeah. So, like, I was actually, I was just doing a bit of reading yesterday about the Bundesliga, and basically their model is like, they see this. So what we have is, we actually do have a Super League. Okay, the Super League didn't happen, of course, but the Super League is a Premier League. And the financial might of your clubs like Bournemouth and like Aston Villa and Fulham and all these clubs that can afford all the best talent in Europe, and they can, and all the basically the leagues outside of the English Premier League can see this, and they can they see this as like a money making kind of institution basically. And the clubs in the Bundesliga have kind of marketed this so well. So when they, like obviously the Karl-Heinz Rummenigge comments that you were mentioning on the football show during the week about Nick Valtamada, like the financial strength of the Premier League means or meant that last season two really poor teams in kind of the equivalence of the Premier League got to the Europa League final, and there's just a complete imbalance. I know no English team did win the Champions League, but having two teams in that like the mid-tier, now the second tier competition in Europe, kind of shows that the financial muscle of the Premier League is just completely kind of imbalanced
completely
the whole
skewed,
skewed everything in the entire kind of European football kind of pyramid, I guess, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's a real discussion there about English teams in the Conference League in particular.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And although I'll enjoy Palace, because it'd be nice to see them,
yeah, nice,
I like being able to kind of run over teams for a change in their history. But going back to the Ange point, and it's like, maybe horrendous is too strong a word, that's up for debate, but I think
it is up for debate.
I think he did a poor job, right? And that was his big chance, that was his big job, that's the test for him. I'm sorry, it is, and I'm as much of a Celtic fan as anybody, but that league is a farce.
Are you?
Well, no, you know, I want them to be Rangers. My blood runs green and white, you know, but I suppose not as much as a fan, as there are much bigger Celtic fans than me. But that, again, my point is that I was, you know, he was a great manager for Celtic at a time when, again, with their massive advantages there, they could bring in somebody with his kind of ideas and take advantage of that. And it was, you know, he was a success there. But there was always a lot of scepticism as to whether he'd be able to bring that into the Premier League in a much more competitive environment. And he failed in his first job,
be it
horrendous or not. And I just can't believe that Forrest went, here's our man. Because ultimately, he had a big job and got a lot of publicity for 2 years. It's like, surely they could have had a wider search than just saying, who's the last manager to lose his job in the league? Oh, Ange, we'll get him in.
But I think it was more of a case of Marinakis and Postecoglou kind of being mates. And we're like, okay. And obviously Nuno fell out with Edu, the sporting director at Forest, and we're like, oh, we'll just get Postecoglou in.
The fixture list is Newcastle on Sunday, then Chelsea 2 weeks on Saturday, then Porto, then Bournemouth away, and then Manchester United to kick off November. I really hope he makes it to the Manchester United game.
Do you know what? What they had last year was probably an overachieving team under Nuno, but it was with some good players. And I actually think they've added a few really good players. Most of them aren't even in the team yet. You know, well, we'll see. You don't know what someone like James McAtee is going to be like when he's playing every week and not with all the players surrounding him at Man City. But that, you know, a few players like that have the potential to be good signings. They should be able to get enough form that, you know, when you were talking earlier in the show about whether, you know, Villa are the obvious ones to get out of that. I can't see Forest being in a relegation situation. But unless negative momentum happens, doesn't it? And
I'm not sure I'd go there yet. Like that coterie of teams that sit above the relegation zone. Definitely Villa are not going to be in trouble.
Should be a very good defence as well. I don't know if they have been so far though.
Newcastle are going to get out of trouble.
Newcastle will be fine.
So Manchester United and Nottingham Forest, you never know how low they can go, but I wouldn't be backing Manchester United to get relegated. Forest, definitely out of that four, would be the one that I could see sinking, given the quality of the promoted teams. Let's briefly touch on Arsenal versus West Ham. Not to put the kibosh on your pick, but half of the games Arsenal have lost at home since the start of the 2023-2024 Premier League season have been to West Ham United. They hate this fixture, Arsenal.
I know.
Last year, it was an Aaron Wan-Bissaka masterclass down the right-hand side.
Yeah.
It was Jarrod Bowen with the goal. Miles Lewis-Skelly was sent off for pulling down a man on the halfway line. It was a nightmare. It was in February. League was probably gone already, but if they'd won that game, it might have just gave some endless hope. They killed off their chances early enough, you could say, the previous season, around Christmas, when they went to the Emirates and won 2-0. And this has just been a fixture that Arsenal have hated. Now, that is bygones very much so. And even like that, there was probably the peak of Graham Potter was going to the Emirates last season and actually winning. It's going to be a different situation this week, especially because Arsenal come off one of their better performances in recent times. But still, omens are omens, Mick.
Yeah, they are. I think scar tissue lives for things like that. I don't think they mean nothing. At the same time, there's a massive gulf between these two teams, and Arsenal, I think, have had a very, very good week in terms of how they will go in there with confidence. I would say the thing about West Ham, it's almost the opposite conversation of what we were just having in terms of who they went and got. I don't think that's probably in the best interest of the long-term future of West Ham and their growth and their... But I think in the immediacy, I think they've got a guy who actually has been around enough, seems to be, you know, is definitely adaptable and will look at what he has and probably make the most out of it. And I think that's what they need because they're in big trouble otherwise, you know. So I wouldn't be delighted if I was an Arsenal fan about the fact that they've just changed manager.
No.
And got a result on Monday night as well, which means that it started off okay at least.
Yeah.
You know, and you can kick on from that. So I would be a little bit concerned as a bit of a kick in West Ham. The only thing is if Arsenal show up at all, the West Ham kick's irrelevant. You know what I mean? They should be beating West Ham at the Emirates regardless.
Arsenal had to go through the new manager bounce potential against Nottingham Forest and that proved out to be not a bounce at all.
Okay. Yeah.
We move on to Manchester United versus Sunderland. Just to chat a little bit about this game. I think this has one of those situations written all over where United concede first and it looks like they're absolutely dead to the world and then they actually end up getting something from the game a la Burnley last month.
Yes, but like just all United's games this season, so far this season, like they've just been like one separate entity in each game. Like you just can't really read anything into any of the performance. Obviously the first game against Arsenal, the mood was like, oh yeah, this seems like better than last year. And then, you know, you lost 1-0, still lost the game, but you know, things could be better, but like it really hasn't been good. The game last week against Brentford was like, as a Manchester United fan, it was just like, right, what? Like, why do I care about this group of players? Like there was just, we thought it was low last year, but like the game against Brentford last week was just, yeah, like I think that was the pits really. Like I think whatever they do against Sunderland tomorrow, like it's kind of irrelevant. Ruben Amorim is a dead man walking, and whether Manchester United, whether they can get someone in that kind of gets them into the top half of the table and maybe finishing outside a chance in the top eight and playing the Europa Conference League or something next year, that would probably be a good season. But I think Sunderland tomorrow, I would have like massive fears for, because they are a well-organized team with a good manager and have made like really good signings, but also they've spent a lot of money as well. They spent like 150 million in the summer. Yeah. So I would have absolutely zero faith in Manchester United winning tomorrow.
It looks like with the money that they've spent though has, I don't know if every player will work out, but it doesn't seem like they've bought anybody who thinks they're above it or anything like that. There's a good attitude to that team. They like were, again, just the one game that I watched them in like a lot of detail was the Villa game where they went down to 10 men, unluckily, rightly, but unluckily. And their attitude was brilliant. They were the better team after that, you know, in both ways of like sucking up the pressure, making sure that Villa weren't going to get anything easy, making sure that the extra man wasn't going to come in, and then went for it and equalised as well after they were unlucky to concede a goal. So I was just really impressed by them. I just think that sort of attitude, as well as the level of talent they have there, which is probably just on a par with a good group of players in the lower half of the thing, but with their manager and the attitude and that they're playing with, they look pretty good. I don't think they'll stay in the heights that they're at the moment. But it's interesting, David, though. The conversations I've had with United fans this week have all been very similar to that. And they're all unrelated to each other. It feels like there was a breaking point last Saturday.
Yeah.
There's been lots of bad performances before, but it seems like the whole, like, oh, I can't do this anymore. I can't watch this.
Yeah.
You know, I was talking to someone earlier, it was like, you know, I'm 40 years old and I'm worried about this group constantly. It's like, I can't do it. There's better things to be doing in my life.
Yeah, no, it was like half 12 last Saturday. Kind of, you know, a win might set you up for a nice weekend, but like it literally just kind of, not ruin the weekend, but like definitely put a dampener like early on. It's just the nature of the performance. The goals to give away, like 2-0 after, was it 15-20 minutes? Igor Thiago, who hasn't really looked like a world beater in the Premier League, like looking like a world beater against that back three.
You have to say the final goal was absolutely magnificent. The one-touch counter-attacking football. And obviously, like maybe the keeper could have done better to save it, but like everything, including the strike from the edge of the box, was absolutely fantastic. And Brentford, they love to see a high line coming. I wouldn't be particularly surprised if they catch Manchester City on occasion this
When you
weekend.
Say the keeper did better, the ball went into the middle of the goal and the keeper was somewhere else.
I've seen
keepers miss goals like that before where it goes through them or something. I've never seen them just not be there. I don't know.
It was a great goal from Mathias Jensen, but like It felt like I spent most of that game just kind of waiting on a Coyote to take a long throw. Literally, it was just like, look up at the TV and it's like, oh, Coyote's taking a long throw again. It was literally just kind of waiting around for set pieces. And like, United maybe defended the long balls or the long throws and stuff like relatively okay. But for the first two goals, like for just two long balls, basically one over the top and then one where Matthias De Ligt got absolutely bullied. Yeah. Like, it was just really kind of, just really depressing to watch. Like these, like, yeah, multi-million pound defenders get absolutely bullied.
It sounds like you're more sickened by the players than the manager.
Yes, but I also am sickened by the manager because, like, just the lack of pragmatism, like, you know, it's a bit like Postecoglou last year, like, you know, just who we are, mate, you know, we're going to keep on playing the same way. Like, I think, I said it like a few weeks ago on this show, like, we're kind of moving away from that kind of maybe Guardiola style football and we're kind of moving to maybe a more pragmatic style, and just the lack of kind of just like, just play an extra man in midfield, like, you know, for, I mean, this is the Manchester United case, like, just play an extra man in midfield, like, stop, like clearly, like, everyone can see that either if it's Casemiro and Bruno or if it's Bruno Fernandes and Mason Mount or if it's Ugarte, like, it's just like, just play an extra man, yeah, in there because it's just not working.
And also, when you never change anything and it's like, this is my philosophy, I will never, yeah, change, you're very easy to plan for.
Yeah.
Like, Brentford knew what they were doing against, yeah, United in a way that they won't have an easier game this season in that way. Like,
yeah, you know. I think he's just like, he's probably thinking, just please sack me and have my 12 million quid. Like, that's it. Like, he'll be the manager of Benfica or the manager of Porto or the manager.
Jose gets that.
Yeah, he'll get another decent job. But United have, obviously he was on the kind of the path to being the Man City coach with Hugo Viana going there as sporting director, and Manchester United have just got him and chewed him up and spat him out.
The real tragedy this weekend, if Manchester United lose, is that that will be the story as opposed to Sunderland having had an absolutely amazing start. And we talk, yeah, about Chelsea lacking team chemistry earlier on. For them to throw all these players together and not lack any sense of team chemistry, yeah, is pretty amazing. And this has been remarked upon. This is not an original comparison by me, but Regis Labrie said that the new lads bring a new energy and style of play. We don't start from scratch. The identity of the club is already there. And people are like, Ruben Amorim, take note of what the Sunderland boss is saying. Their goalkeeper, Robin Roofs, is signing at the summer, 10 million quid from NEC. And the young fella who saved against Kiefer Moore in the Championship playoff final last year, Anthony Patterson, he was destined to go on and be like their Premier League goalkeeper this season. And whoever's running the recruitment at their club was like, no, we've got this kid from the Netherlands coming in for 10 mil and, yeah, he's going to be the guy. They've been sensational.
Yeah, I've actually had him in a... it's the only good player I've had in fantasy football this year is Robin Roofs. He got like 10 points last week.
So your weekend was saved after the Manchester United game.
Yeah, Captain Haaland. Yeah,
do you want to do a very quick mention of Manchester City? Still chasing, obviously, the Premier League title. We've kind of written Chelsea out of this, I think. Do we have a three-horse race for the title?
Until we don't. I think there's no... I don't... I think that the way Haaland is playing... I don't think you can rule City out. I think there's a chance that they will find, they'll get a bit of a run together. All the talent is there. I don't predict it. I think when it comes down to it, there'll be not a distant third, but I think they'll be out of the title race.
Phil Foden left out of the England squad today. We could see an angry version of him. Saw the stat earlier on that Manchester City's second top scorer is Maxime Estev, the Burnley centre-back, so they probably need a little bit more support for Erling Haaland, who's scored more goals than most Premier League teams,
yeah,
this season.
But the entire function of the team obviously goes through Haaland, but they definitely need... Doku has been sensational this, yeah, season though as well. He probably just needs to score a couple of goals. A couple more goals.
Did you see De Bruyne setting up Haaland during the week?
Yeah, I did. A couple of the excellent players could probably done well in Europe this week.
I know. But De Bruyne looks like he's...
Yeah.
Still got it.
Could have given him another year. I don't know if they feel like they could win a title.
Yeah,
they could have given him another year.
Interestingly, it was towards the end of last season where he said, like, yeah, I'm actually, you know, had this really bad, I think it was a hernia. He's like, I had this really bad pain I was playing with for a long time. And, you know, now I feel really, really good. And I feel like the best I've felt in like a couple of years. And that was kind of at the same time where his contract obviously wasn't being renewed. So, yeah, maybe they did miss a trick with not renewing Kevin De Bruyne.
David Wilson, enjoy Manchester United this weekend. Michael McCarthy, very best of luck to you in your final one standing quest. One step closer to all that money. Final one standing and Off the Ball has been brought to you by William Hill. Download the app and play today. Over 18s only. See gamblingcare.ie for more. Thanks for joining us.
The Final One Standing by William Hill on Off the Ball. Download the app and play today. 18 plus gamblingcare.ie.